Mr. Bill Lucenhide.
You know, as a kid, we liked to watch boxing. Heavyweight boxing was big in the 1960s, 1970s. Our family rooted for somebody named Jerry Corey. Jerry Corey actually ended up living over in Hemet. Used to kind of wander up and down Highway 74 in his old boxing trunks, his old robe, punch drunk, broke, had been married 5 times. Finally, he died. Policemen used to pick him up, take him home, and, he'd say, you know, I got to go to the gym, I got to go to the big fight. He was always still there in the big fight. But we liked Jerry Corey at our house. And he had a nickname in those days. They called him the Great White Hope. The Great White Hope was Jerry Corey. And my dad liked him, and you got to like the same boxer that your dad liked, right? And Dad, he was a battle vet, classic old school guy, World War II veteran. He did not like Muhammad Ali. He said, Muhammad Ali, what kind of name is that? And let me tell you something, Billy. He's a draft dodger. He's a no good draft dodger. We ain't going to root for him in this weird name that he has. And we were not allowed to say the name Muhammad Ali in the house. We had to call him Cassius Clay. That was the rule. My dad kind of considered Muhammad Ali as unsportsmanlike. He's got a big mouth, Billy. Look at the way he acts. You know, Floyd Patterson and Johansson, when they went before a bout, they would say that they're good boxers, and they would shake hands, and Muhammad Ali and that smack talk. And so, you know, you had to root for the same guy that your dad rooted for. It's just the way it was. We watched the fight together as a family. It was a big event. It was a big event. But I'm older now. I'm older. I'm able to look at life a little bit from the A, from the Z. I have to look at things a little bit of perspective. I've been kind of beat up a little bit in life, too. It changes you, some of your perspectives. Muhammad Ali, if he had gone into the army, he never would have had to fight on the front lines. He didn't refuse to go into the military because he was a coward. In fact, think of how brave it is to go up against a 230-pound heavyweight guy. He was not scared of that. In fact, all Muhammad Ali would have done in his military service was basically box exhibition matches all around the Pacific Theater or in Vietnam. He gave up everything that he had. He gave up his reputation. He gave up, this is at his prime, mind you, he gave up his income, his reputation, and his heavyweight championship for the things that he believed as personal principles. Whether you agree with those principles or not, nonetheless, he was a man of conviction. And in retrospect, I look at it and I go, I respect that. I do respect that. In looking at his old fights, I have to say, and as a fight fan, Muhammad Ali was the greatest boxer of all time. There's no doubt about it in my mind. He had various styles. He had an intense fortitude and a fantastic punch. I never have seen a boxer who could be fading away from a punch and throwing one out at the same time. He was incredible in that way. His rhetoric, which I guess you could call unsportsmanlike, but nonetheless, let me tell you something. Muhammad Ali raised the level of interest in the fight game to a level that was never seen before and frankly has never been seen since. The back and forth that he had with Howard Cosell, the sports broadcaster, it was famous. In fact, it made both of them famous, the back and forth. And I would have to say boxing, because of Muhammad Ali's charisma, was at its highest point during his time. You know, there's Hall of Famers, and then there's the Hall of Fame of the Hall of Fame. It's just a league of their own. You had Babe Ruth in baseball, not only just the greatest hitter, but a great pitcher, too. There's never been anyone like Babe Ruth. A separate class. Wayne Gretzky in hockey. Michael Jordan in basketball. Tiger Woods in golf. These are just not just good, not just great. It just took the sport to a level that was just undeniably fantastic. A league of their own. And may I add, Muhammad Ali in that special Hall of Fame class. Muhammad Ali. He was fast of fist. He was fast of foot. And he was fast of lips, too. the heavyweight boxing champion who promised to shake the world, and he did. He floated, he stunned, he proclaimed that he was the greatest. But Muhammad Ali, formerly known as Cassius Clay, died, like all men do, like all of us will, bar the second coming of Jesus Christ. He died last month at the age of 74. He was a global icon. He was perhaps the most recognized face in the entire world. With a wit as sharp as his punches, Ali dominated the boxing sport for the better part of two decades before Parkinson's disease took the toll on his life after receiving literally tens of thousands of punches in his career that ravished his magnificent body. He spoke proudly for the rights of blacks, and rightfully so. He was revered by millions and reviled by yet millions more. 6'3" tall, 210 pounds in his prime, his motto was, "Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee." And there was even a song called "Float Like a Butterfly, Sting Like a Bee" that was somewhat popular at the time. I remember that while I was in school. That was a slogan to his theme. He won 56 fights in his career, lost only 5 times, and is the only man to capture the heavyweight championship 3 times. He beat champion Sonny Liston twice. He beat the famous, you know, barbecue grill guy George Foreman, beat him. Outlasted champion Joe Frazier to win 2 out of 3 matches. And yes, yes, he knocked out the Lucenhide family favorite. He beat the Great White Hope, Jerry Quarry, in the Southern Bastion of Atlanta, Georgia in 1970. He even had names for his fists. His left one he called Rumble, and his right one was called Jungle. He had Rumble and Jungle, these licensed tools of destruction. He sought after and he entertained world leaders. But Parkinson's disease grabbed him, and he gradually declined. And now he is dead. He had many one-liners. You know, it ain't bragging if it's true. If you can back it up, it's not bragging. And it's hard to be humble when you're as great as I am. When asked how quick he was, he said, "You know, when I flip the switch off in the room, I'm already in bed before the bulb goes dark." And let me tell you, that's quick. When he fought George Foreman, he said, "I saw George Foreman shadow boxing. And you know what? The shadow won." Well, in his later years, when he was asked how he wanted to be remembered, he said, "Well, I want to be remembered as the 3-time heavyweight champion of the world. And if there's a title for smooth talking, I want that one too." He went on to say, "I want to be remembered as a man and a champion that had a sense of humor, that treated people right, and as a man who never looked down on any other human being and helped as many people as he could." And there were many maids and waitresses and drivers and little people, people on the street of the everyday masses that would very much attest to the fact that Muhammad Ali was always a gracious and giving man. That indeed, he was kind and could relate to the common man. He never really believed his own rhetoric. It was show. It's a little known fact that Muhammad Ali was actually a contributor to LifeNets. LifeNets is one of our outreaches of the United Church of God to help people in the emerging markets in the third world, and Muhammad Ali was a quiet contributor to LifeNets. And he was a contributor to many good causes quietly. He added, "I hope people recognize my desire to be a good leader, my love for mankind, and of course I won't mind if they remember how pretty I was." But what a character. What certainly an unforgettable legend. But there's a sin in the Bible, though, and it's called boasting. And certainly, without a doubt, Muhammad Ali was a champion in that department, was he not? The Bible speaks a lot about boasting in both the Old and the New Testaments. And certainly all around us today in the media, I would say that we live in the most boastful society that has ever existed, and with the delivery vehicles to allow it to happen. Perhaps there's been other boasters in history, but certainly not with the ability to deliver it like we can deliver it today. And it's in the media. Look at this election cycle. It's not even about issues, right? It's about who can boast the best. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on this, right? It is, boasting is at a new level at this election cycle in our very day. In the Bible, you had men like Haman. You had Herod Agrippa. Remember him? He was speaking, and the crowd said, he speaks as a god and not as a man. And you know, he took it. He took that worship. And God struck him dead with worms, internal intestinal problems. Nebuchadnezzar, remember the great king Nebuchadnezzar? And the Bible lists 8 different reasons why people boast. And I'm guilty, by the way. I'm guilty of all 8. So this is not a rebuke in the sense that I'm telling you people. This is a we people sermon, okay? I'm guilty of them all. But listen up and keep score. Let's see how we measure up. Point 1. Boasting will be evident abundantly in the last days. And again, we see boasting at new levels, do we not? Let's take a look over at 2 Timothy 3, verse 1. 2 Timothy 3, verse 1 through 5. You should know this, Timothy, that in the last days, there will be very difficult times. For people will only love themselves and their money. They will be boastful and proud, scoffing at God, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful. They will consider nothing sacred. They will be unloving and unforgiving. They will slander others and have no self-control. They will be cruel, and they will hate what is good. They will betray their friends, be reckless, be puffed up with pride. And being puffed up with pride and boasting certainly go together hand in hand, do they not? They will love pleasure rather than God. Here's a scary part of this. They will act religious, but they will reject the power that can make them godly. Stay away from people like that. They will have a form of godliness. That could be us. So easy to think it's them people out there. It could be us. Another way to brag is, point 2, bragging about tomorrow and controlling destiny. That you have the future under your control. I see this all the time in the financial business. I work in the financial business. I see guys who, you know, gold's going up, gold's going down, stock market's going to go up, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, right? Do this, do that. Let me tell you right now, these guys don't know what they're talking about. For the most part. They've created entire cottage industries around their newsletter, around their prognostications, because somehow I know better than the marketplace, right? And you need to give me money to tell you what the future is. At a lower level, there's over in Menifee, I was not happy to see this open up. There's a fortune-telling place, and they do tarot and so forth. And Kyle and I get our hair cut at the barbershop right next door to it, at the strip center there. And it's amazing that people go there. They go to this place because, see, they know the future. They can tell you the future. And they boast about that, you know, predictions. I always tell Kyle, I go, Kyle, I'm always educated. You know, it says in Deuteronomy, I always talk about the law and the book and so forth, and I do. And he gets a little tired of listening to me constantly telling him things. I go, but Kyle, listen, if this lady or whoever it is running this place could predict the future, why bother with a little storefront in Menifee? And at least go to the racetrack, right? You know, and bet money on Seabiscuit, and you know, or how about commodity futures? Or, you know, there's a lot of why are you bothering with poor little folk in Menifee, you know, for $10 a shot to read their palm, okay? If they could read if they knew the future, all right. But again, I can sort of say that about all levels of different places, all right. Even religiously, even amongst some that we have known. I know when the tribulation's going to start, and I know where, and I know where the place of safety is. And I'm a prophet. I am a prophet anointed by God. I'm the successor to the truth of God. We encounter this, do we not? Other groups do too. It's ridiculous. Again, I have to tell them, listen, there's an easier way to make a living, right? As if you've got that ability, right? Proverbs 27, verse 1. Proverbs 27, verse 1 is we are admonished. Do not boast about tomorrow, For you do not know what a day will bring forth. Verse 2. Let another man praise you, and not your own mouth. A stranger, not your own lips. A stone is heavy and sand is weighty, but a fool's wrath is heavier than them both. Wrath is cruel and anger a torrent, but who is able to stand before jealousy? And here's an important point. Open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. If I have a spot on my tie, please tell me. Love carefully concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Some good wisdom there. Point three, we can boast about our self-sufficiency. I'm an island. I don't need other people. We can boast about our self-righteousness, our goodness. Ephesians 2, verse 4. Ephesians 2, verse 4. But God, who is rich in mercy, because of his great love which he has loved us, even when we were dead in trespasses, in other words, when we were worthless, he loved us, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved. And raised us up together and made us sit together in the heavenly places in Jesus Christ, that in ages to come he might show the exceeding riches of his grace through who? Through his kindness towards us in Jesus Christ. For by grace you have been saved through faith, and not of yourselves, not of works. Not that works aren't important. I'm not saying that. But you are not saved by works. Lest anyone should what? Should boast. I am saved because I'm just so righteous. I'm so good. I know the scriptures so excellently. Lest anyone should boast. For we are his workmanship. We're not our own workmanship. We don't get to claim credit for it. Created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. Next way to brag is bragging in our physical beauty or our physical strength. 1 Samuel 17, verse 4. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines. His name was Goliath. I talked about Goliath here last year. He was from Gath. He was 6 cubits in a span. Big guy, maybe 7 foot tall. Some say maybe as tall as 10 feet. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and with the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. Now you think about this. In a time when metal was what was rare, but even in today's world, can you imagine this bronze, I'm sure highly polished bronze helmet, glistening with the sunlight, the sun breaking up off of it, reflecting almost blinding, all right, with a bronze javelin and bronze armor on his legs. Almost looked like something out of the book of Daniel, right? What an impressive figure he had to be. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels. And he had a shield bearer before him. What do you think? It was just some little guy? He was probably just a big guy too. And he had his shield. And what was on it? Probably something really wicked looking, like a snake or a dragon with fire coming out of its mouth. And it's walking before this impressive, unbelievable. It was a sight, make no doubt about it. I would have been scared. I don't blame the Israelites for being a little scared of this thing. It's not a common, everyday appearance. And then he stood, he cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, why should you come out to line up for battle? He was doing a little bit of a Muhammad Ali. What are you coming out here for? Am I not a Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight me, if he thinks he can fight me and kill me, well, then we'll be your servants. But if I prevail and kill him, which I will, then you shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the army. I challenge you. You think you're hot stuff and your God's so great. I challenge you. Bring out this man that we may fight together. And when Saul and Israel heard all the words of Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. They were shivering. They were nervous. Well, we all know what happened to Goliath, do we not? He ended up with his head cut off by a little 16-year-old, ruddy-faced, probably didn't even shave every day guy, kid, a shepherd boy with a good aim and a slingshot. So do not brag about your physical beauty or your strength. It's the hand of God is always more powerful than that. And beauty and strength are but a whisper, a smoke trail, gone with the wind. I can't believe how fast it has gone. I once was young, I once was fast. I still want to try. It isn't there anymore, brethren. It is not. It is fast as a whisper. And enjoy the days of youth and strength and beauty, for they go away very quickly. It's all right to have them, but be humble, because they are but just a fleeting shadow. Point five, you can brag about your accomplishments or conquests. Accomplishments and conquests. Isaiah 10, verse 8. Speaking of the Assyrians, some people think that maybe the Germans are Assyrians. I'm not sure of that completely, but it's possible, right? Some believe that. For he says, the Assyrian says, "Are not my princes altogether kings? Are we not a superior people? Our trains run on time. You can't find a gun wrapper in this country." Right? We have a balanced budget. "Is not Cana like Shemesh? Is not Hamath like Arpad? Is not Samaria like Damascus? As my hand has found the kingdoms of the idols, whose carved images excelled those of Jerusalem and Samaria, as I have done to Samaria and her idols, I will not do also unto Jerusalem and to her idols. Therefore it shall come to pass when the Lord has performed all his work on Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, that he will say, I will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his haughty looks." Don't go around and say, "My kids are special. They're princes. Our ways are superior. Our peoples are superior." Even as a church, we must be careful. We do a lot of good things, but we cannot be braggarts about it. We're doing such a great work. Let us do a good work. Let us not be proud. Let us not be arrogant. Let us not be boastful. You can brag about being generous. It's a common problem. Bragging about being generous. Here's what it warns in Proverbs 25, verse 14. Proverbs 25, verse 14. "Whoever falsely boasts of giving is like clouds and wind without the rain." You know, you ever see this? I see this sometimes over there above Idlewild. You'll just see this gigantic thunderhead that comes up there, and it just looks like there's some wind swirling, but, you know, a little lightning. But no rain. Happens quite often. You see, it's all puff, but no substance, because the rain is what really matters, right? Isn't that the fruit of a storm is the rain? You see, all this, but no cigar is the proverbial word. Matthew 6, verse 2. "Therefore, when you do a terrible deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets." Now, as I understand it, at the temple, they had something to where when you gave money, it was probably, have you ever seen this at the shopping mall? It kind of looks like a little vortex thing. You drop a penny in and it goes around and around and around and goes down. It was something like that. It was sort of like a way that when you put the coins in, it made all this noise on metal on metal. So if you were given a lot, like a Las Vegas slot machine paying out, you know, and everybody would know, wow, Joe gave a lot of money. And the little widow lady with two pennies didn't make a whole lot of sound. Right? It was a way to brag. It was a way to brag. "Do not be as those in synagogues and streets, as the hypocrites," "that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you that they have their reward." Oh, there's a reward. The reward is, maybe somebody might be a little envious of you, or they might think you've got a nice lot in life. There's some little reward. But let me tell you what, you live like that, there's no eternal reward. And like everything else in this life, it will just be gone and like a vapor wisp away. "For the love of man and the attention of men is a very futile, vain thing. But when you do a charitable deed," verse 3, Do not let your left hand know what the right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret, and your Father who sees everything in secret will reward you openly. You can brag about how rich you are. You can point seven about how much wealth you have, how well you've done. And King Nebuchadnezzar is a great example of this. You know, Babylon was one of the greatest empires of all time. There's been a few, but Babylon was one of the greatest in the history of men. And Daniel 4, verse 28, speaks of a very interesting event that happened to Nebuchadnezzar. You think about this. There have been great men throughout history. There's not a whole lot of them that we remember. You know, there were millionaires back in the 1890s, right? There were probably several thousand millionaires in the United States. How many can you name? I can come up with a couple, maybe Vanderbilt, Rockefeller, maybe a couple others, J.P. Morgan. What happened to the rest of them? They're lost to history within 100 years. But Nebuchadnezzar, there's a name that still is remembered throughout history. It was a great empire. He was a great man. And what happened to him in Daniel 4, verse 28? We'll call this Nebuchadnezzar's humiliation. Verse 28, all this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of 12 months, he was walking through the royal palace of Babylon. He was looking out at the balcony, looking at the fine gardens. They didn't even have lawnmowers. People were just doing it with maybe with scissors and shears and razors. Beautiful gardens, fountains, statues. The king spoke saying, is this not great Babylon that I have built for the royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? I'm just so wonderful. Look what I've done. And while the word was still in the king's mouth, that self-same moment, a voice fell from heaven. King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. And they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. And you will eat grass like an oxen. You will become absolutely decrepit, perverse, mad. And 7 times shall pass over you, 7 years, until you will know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever that he chooses. And that very hour it was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men. In other words, he went out to the wilderness somewhere, ate grass like an oxen. His body was wet with the dew from heaven. His hair, it says, had grown like eagle's feathers. In other words, his hair was spaced out, matted, knotty, crazy, right? And listen to this. His nails were like bird's claws. They were out there curling around and all that. Absolutely from the royal court and silk clothes and beautiful gardens to living worse than an animal. Incredible. Be careful about bragging about riches and wealth and not acknowledging its true source. We can brag about our sins over in Psalms 94, verse 3. People will brag about wicked things they've done. Psalm 94, verse 3. Lord, how long will the wicked triumph? They utter speech. They speak insolent things. All the workers of iniquity boast in themselves. Whenever ISIS celebrates, we see this. There's a perversion in the world. This isn't war for the sake of just war. There's a boasting in it. There's a glory in it. There's a celebration in it. The Bible warns that if you have to kill an enemy, do not rejoice over the killing of an enemy. There may be times it's necessary if someone breaks in your house that you may have to take corporal action against them. God forbid it would have to happen. You should never have to glory in that. Only evil glories in that way. They break in pieces your people, O Lord, afflict your heritage. They slay the widow and the stranger. They murder the fatherless. And yet they say, the Lord does not see, nor does the God of Jacob understand. You know, we don't get away with anything in his life. He's always there. I tell my son Kyle, son, wherever you go in life, whatever you're looking at on the internet, wherever you may visit, whoever you are with, you are taking your friend, Jesus Christ, with you. We can try to be in denial of that. All of us may be guilty of that. Remember that God is there and he is watching. Understand, you senseless among the people, and you fools, when will you be wise? He who planted ear, shall he not hear? He who formed eyes, shall he not see? He who instructs the nation shall he not correct? He who teaches man knowledge. The Lord knows the thoughts of man. And the sum of this, he says, and they are futile. All of our schemes, all of our reckonings, all of our imaginations, what are they? They are futile. Well, with all this said about boasting, is there a right time to boast? Is there a proper pride in life? Is there a proper form of boasting? When is it acceptable to boast? So we're moving towards conclusion here. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 31. Therefore, as is written, let the one who boasts, boast in the Lord. And so it is with me, brothers, Paul speaking. When I came to you, I did not come with eloquence or human wisdom as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. Over in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 30, Paul continues, I would rather boast about the things that show how weak I am. Whatever we accomplish in life, whatever it is that we have, whatever that we've been blessed with, let us boast always in the Lord, in God. Paul says this several times in the New Testament. It is okay to acknowledge what is the source of everything that we are about and what we have and what we know. It is from God above. Let that be the boast. In Jeremiah 9, verse 24, to those who wish to boast should boast in this alone. This is what we can boast in. That they truly know me and understand that I am the Lord who demonstrates unfailing love and who brings justice and righteousness to the earth, that I delight in these things that I, the Lord, have spoken. These are what we should boast about. The kingdom of God, righteousness, justice, redemption, salvation, goodness, law and justice, and mercy and faith. So ultimately, human nature wants to honor itself. Our real purpose in life is to live a life of sacrifice, to have love and duty for Jesus Christ. Let us always give honor, credit, and glory to God for everything we have, know, or have achieved. Glory, honor, and praise always to the Almighty and to Him alone.